The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dormish, and this is Beyond, episode 592, IGN's weekly PlayStation show. We are so close to episode 600. I'm joined this week by Max Scoville.
Once again, I have returned for more treats and treasures and scrapes and scrambles and goofs and guffaws, and that's it.
And that's it. That's it. Excited to have you back, Max. We're also joined by Lucy, the bones are their dollars, O'Brien.
The bones are their dollars. How close are we to 600, Jonathan?
We are on episode 592, which means...
So close!
We are so close.
So close.
To episode 600. Of course, if you weren't listening to last week's episode or the few episodes since, episode 585 where I've been saying this, episode 600 is right around the corner, and we will be doing something in San Francisco live, doing a bit of a thing. Details are still being worked out for exact date and time. We are planning toward the end of June, probably last week of June we're looking at. Tickets will go online. We'll be sure to let you know about that on the show, on our Twitters, on IGN, everything about that. So we can't say too much about like a definite time and date, but try to keep the last week of June in mind. If you're in the San Francisco area or can make it, we're going to be doing a live thing. I think
the whole week free.
The whole week.
Don't go to your jobs.
Funny.
I had a question there. I have a little bit of a follow-up question. This is a real, actual Beyond event, unlike Beyond 500, which was a whisper that turned into a fart and died in the wind.
Yes, and I still get mentioned, even though I wasn't part of it, about how I messed up Beyond 500.
So I want to just point out one thing.
Yeah.
Just no disrespect or anything to the previous hosts and everybody of Beyond, but maybe the fact that the show launched the week of E3 makes it difficult to plan anniversary episodes.
It's not a great help, especially now that Comic-Con has become an even further bigger part of our coverage every year with live shows and all, so much video input. But we are planning on doing something this year, episode 600. It'll, again, be toward the end of June, so keep that in mind. We'll give you all the details once we can. We just have to lock down everything specific about that. But very excited. Going to have a very fun show planned for episode 600.
I think you're really on top of it. I think you're doing a good job hosting the show, unlike that last hack.
Oh.
We've forgotten long about him.
Good. Bury him in the road.
But we're glad to have you on the show, Max.
Anytime.
And also, I wanted to clarify from last week's show before we dive into a lot of Sony news this week. I had mentioned thank you so much to everyone who reached out and said kind words to Jared Petty on Twitter. I wasn't saying that because things were wrong specifically with Jared, or he happened to be saying he had a rough week, and so I'm glad he could have that joy in his week. But I wasn't saying that because things were bad for Jared. I just wanted Jared to know how wonderful he is, because he deserves to know. And
you
all are wonderful out there in the show, and thank you so much to everyone who did that. When we can give random acts of kindness to people out in the world, I appreciate doing that. And so in the spirit of that, I'm going to do it at the top of the show. Please tweet at Barrett Courtney, our former producer. He is at Sad Boy Barrett. Barrett has two R's and two T's in it. Please tweet at Barrett and say, hey, Barrett, you're right. Let's do Batman Arkham City is the best Batman. Whether or not you believe that, just let him feel like it is.
Yeah.
Just let him feel it and think it for a little bit.
Miss Barrett. Barrett's a good guy.
He's such a sweet young lad.
Yes. Hopefully, if he happens to be in town, we can maybe have him around for 600, but we'll see. Other than that, Brian, of course, is not here this week. He is off in New York doing New York things.
Doing New York diarrhea.
Eating the pizzas. But yeah, probably
dropping
from the pizza.
Big downtown Big Apples, if you know what I'm talking about.
I see you've been to New York quite a bit.
One of the most popular attractions there is going to the bathroom.
They have a lot of them.
They didn't have that in the Don Henley song. They should have.
I really used to pride myself as an NYU student of knowing where the best, most secluded bathrooms were around campus, because my ID worked for a year after I was a student. So even when I was just around downtown, if I really had to go, I knew where to go.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's important. Really, that's important with any city. Like, just if you have to, you know, had a bit to drink the night before, got an emergency pit stop, shall we say, you got to know where the bathrooms are.
Right in the old library. I knew where to go. It was
the
perfect.
The old library.
The old library down on 32nd
Street. The haunted lighthouse.
There's probably some old ghouls in there. Anyway, it's time for News Crunch.
Crunch.
There is a lot to talk about this week in the world of PlayStation. Thankfully, PlayStation held an investor relation call, basically a full day of events talking to a lot of their investors, of course, and to journalists about what the future of PlayStation and Sony overall looks like. And we got a lot of news out of that. When I was putting together the run of show like last Friday, I was like, oh boy, we're not going to have a lot to talk about. But thankfully, so many things happened. First thing I wanted to talk about actually came a little bit before the investor relation day, which was that Sony and Microsoft announced a partnership out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was really weird.
So Sony and Microsoft announced a partnership to focus on improving cloud gaming, AI solutions, and more. The two tech giants essentially signed a memorandum of understanding, which is a wonderful name for a document, that established both companies will explore, quote, joint development of future cloud solutions in Microsoft Azure to support, or Azure, excuse me, I never know how to say that, to support their respective game and content streaming services. They will also explore the use of current Microsoft Azure data center-based solutions for Sony's game and content streaming services, noting that these efforts will include building better development platforms for the content creator community. So essentially, this was a like very high level. It was like the CEOs of Sony and Microsoft came together, had this agreement at a very high level, and are working together for the future of cloud streaming gaming, and basically saying, hey, Google, we haven't forgotten about you. We're thinking about this. I want to talk about what you think about the partnership in a second, but I do want to bring up the interesting other part about this, that a report from Bloomberg came out shortly after that initial agreement came out. And Bloomberg, speaking to anonymous sources that were familiar with the matter, said that basically PlayStation's own staff did not know about this new deal.
And they were freaking
specifically.
Out.
Yes. And in addition, I believe some reports have said this largely was the same on the Xbox side of things, because according to this report, things were held at basically the highest executive levels between Sony and Microsoft, so not necessarily with PlayStation and Xbox divisions specifically. The talks apparently began last year and were led by Sony senior management in Tokyo, mostly without the involvement of Sony's PlayStation branch. Again, this is all according to Bloomberg sources. Managers reportedly had to calm PlayStation employees and, quote, assure them that plans for the company's next generation console weren't affected. So basically it had to be like, hey, we just started revealing PS5 stuff. It's not suddenly going to be the Xbox 2 also. Like, these aren't going to be the same system. But obviously there's a lot to talk about this with this. I wanted to see first off what you've both felt about this partnership. It's a little lofty of a thing.
I feel like this kind of thing is pretty commonplace. I mean, this is how we get stuff like the DVD or like a USB port. Basically, companies kind of, I think it was, I want to say, I was reading up on sort of history of E3, and it led me down this weird wormhole. It was reading about when the DVD first popped up. And basically, at that point, a bunch of computer manufacturers kind of joined up, and they were like, all right, media companies, like physical optical media companies, they were like, get it together and figure out one format, because we don't want to like go back and forth. Like, we don't want to have like a, you know, for instance, like a Blu-ray HD DVD kind of scenario. So it's sort of better for everybody involved if they're able to sort of establish, you know, some common ground, basically. I mean, cloud is the opposite of ground, but, you know, like a similar architecture. So, it, you know, people aren't just like completely just like screwing each other over.
When we had that interesting time with the beginning of the Xbox One, PS4, maybe it was PS3, 360, where it was the HD DVD versus Blu-ray war, where basically Microsoft
was, lost that battle.
Yeah, and they were trying to, because Blu-ray is obviously from Sony, and they were trying to be like, hey, we can be a competitor to this, but now they have to use the Sony technology because it became the gold standard.
I think, yeah, I you know, Microsoft has the edge on technology, and so for Sony, I think this is a particularly good informal agreement or whatever they're calling it. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, I don't think it's not going to be this huge thing. The news was a bit more slight than we initially thought, and especially the fact that PlayStation was left out of these talks. You know, it's not something we're going to immediately see in the near future, like, bear fruit.
I don't feel like it will necessarily, like, there won't be ramifications for the announcement of PS5 and things like that. Like, obviously, cloud streaming will, cloud gaming and streaming games and all that will continue to be more important as we go on. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel like they're going to be like, okay, we have to completely reverse course for the launch of the PS5. It's going to have to now have Microsoft labeling all over it. It's probably going to be a lot of things.
It's not going to be a box. It's going to be a concept.
Ooh. It's just going to be a Minecraft box, actually. But they're not going to have to, you know, reshape what the box looks like, deal with Microsoft being branded on front of all of its things. It clearly, to me, is a very much like an infrastructure thing that is they're setting the stage for the future, knowing that they, rather than them developing the technology, they'll just partner with someone who clearly has it already built.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why they bought Gaikai for PlayStation Now and things like that. It is definitely interesting. I'm curious to see how this goes forward. It must have been shocking to be a PlayStation employee in here. Oh, by the way, we're working with Microsoft now.
Feel pretty crap. Yeah. Like, you would be like, oh, well, no one gives a damn about me.
No, I would say conversely, it's nice to know that Sony's open to collaboration, or at least sort of, you know, what do you call it? I guess partnership, or, you know, just being kind of everyone's sort of pushing in the same direction.
Allowing for memorandums of understanding.
There it is. Yeah. A memorandum of understanding. No, it's good because Sony does have a pretty long history of pushing proprietary formats, which was kind of the Achilles heel of the PS3, was the cell processing stuff. And prior to that, it was like Memory Stick Duo. And, you know, they've always been sort of stubborn about that kind of thing. And when it works, it works. And when it doesn't, it's the UMD format that nothing but the PSP uses.
And we have to buy like triple the price memory cards for the Vita.
Exactly.
When I worked at EB Games, those little UMDs were such a nightmare because there was no like sort of set standard of how to store them. Yeah. You know, we just have them in the drawers behind the counter. And so it was like you'd open it and it's just a drawer full of scattered UMDs. Mm-hmm. That was so clunky and horrible.
They're not exactly shaped well to be cataloged anywhere. Yeah.
No.
I think it's a smart move. Obviously, it must have been a horrifying few hours to be like, what does this mean for the fate of PlayStation? I think, you know, we'll have to see how the next generation really goes to see what the bigger implications are of this. But I think for now, it's very much them saying, hey, we're going to need cloud gaming support. Might as well use something we know can work. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, though, as things came into the investor relation day, I did want to bring up one of the biggest weird things that happened overnight. This was last night as we're recording. But that demo of how PlayStation 5 or the next generation loading times was just put up on Twitter. It was put out by a Wall Street Journal reporter who has a pretty great track record with scoops and sources and a lot of things working out of Japan, and happened to, I guess, be attending one of these investor presentations and recorded the demo that shows you the essentially loading times for Spider-Man on both a PS4 Pro versus on a PlayStation 5, or it just says next generation under development because they still won't say PS5. What's really interesting to note, it absolutely lines up with the Wired demo we saw or we heard about a few weeks back, but I'm shocked this video is still up. First of all, maybe it won't be up by the time we're recording, but I'm just shocked that Sony is still cool with this being out there.
I suppose, you know, they just didn't give anyone a sort of NDA because I guess they didn't expect anyone to tweet it out.
Investors probably.
Because it's investors. Yeah. Like, they're suits. They're guys who don't understand Twitter. I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking, but I find it quite amusing.
Or they know better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
To describe the video, basically, there was sort of a little brief tech demo where it showed, I think it showed just loading the entire city of Spider-Man, like to just load the open world. Yeah. The first one was like, here's his PS4 Pro. And there's like, I don't know, like a few seconds. It was 8 seconds.
I think it goes for about 8 seconds.
Seconds to load it. And then it's weird because it's a crappy camera phone video of a PowerPoint presentation, basically. And you're like watching it and you're like, is that a photo of a city? I don't know. And then I realized watching it in action that it's actually the game. But basically it pops up. And then they were like, anyway, here's the new technology. And it just pops up immediately. And then they were like, all right, here's like a fly through, and it looked like, you know, you took like the loose camera and Spider-Man and just kind of pushed it down one of the streets, and you know, it moves pretty quickly, but it's like you're like, oh, it takes a second for it to, you know, it can't go full, like full speed across like a time lapse video. And then they were like, here it is on the new technology, and it's just like just shooting yeah. like super fast through the city, which means that the machinery is that the hardware is rendering everything that quickly.
Yeah, I actually got a little stomach, like even just watching that crappy footage, my stomach like dropped just a little bit just because it was so fast.
It's very fast, yeah. And yeah, for reference, the load times essentially went from 8.1 seconds on the PS4 Pro to 0.8 seconds in the PS5 next generation under development thing. So they're showing this video. They're obviously it's starting to get out there, and it feels like a very good sign that we're probably going to be hearing more and more about it. I'm trying to pull it up, but during the investor relation presentation through all their PowerPoints, they essentially took a look at here's what our focus on is for PS5. And it was essentially the Wired article in a PowerPoint page. But how did you both think, like, seeing that demo is, now that you've seen it in action via a video, does faster loading times do more for you? Does it do the same for you? Is it, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. No, that's such a totally wonderful, like, the one thing that I've realized I've really enjoyed about this generation, and it makes it hard to go back, is suspending games. And just that ease of use to be like to drop in and drop out, just to be like, oh, I will be, and like, you know, it's annoying with some online games where it's like they're just like, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna jump into Bloodborne, and they're like, oh, you disconnected. I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll load it up again. Thanks, I'll wait. You know, and just that little incremental thing means that's that much less time that I won't be in the game itself. And it's, I don't know if they double down on that and make it so that it's just we're looking at. I mean, I was hoping that this generation would be like the end of load times the way we know it. And they've, you know, it's gotten really good to the point where a lot of games have like one big load screen and then you're in the game.
Yeah. And then we have a lot of climbing through rocks to load.
Yeah.
Areas,
that,
but
you know, that wonderful sleight of hand. Yeah. But I don't know. It's impressive that we've gotten, you know, something like GTA 5, which came out very, you know, that was a last gen game where it loads for a cool minute and then you're in the game and that's the whole game and it's all there. I would love it if we just got that kind of for everything, you know, like the fact I was straight up pissed that I was like, all right, Fallout 4, here we go, next gen Fallout, and you like get to a door and they're like, well, anyway, here's a load screen. I'm like, it's a door. Let me go in the house. What's in there? Why is this? It's all, everything's rusty. Why did it take so long? But no, I mean, it's obviously high tech stuff. Seeing new and fun bells and whistles is always good and exciting. And this is also the most fun part of a console life cycle. It's so like, cause we're getting really good games because they know how to use the current hardware, and we get to speculate wildly about whatever nonsense is coming down the pipe and go back and forth about whether or not we think it's good or not.
And what's interesting about, in terms of like the games we're still getting during this presentation, to me, it's not a shock, but it was being passed around a lot. So I thought it was worth mentioning. In all of these presentations, PlayStation stuck to the idea that Last of Us Part II, Ghost of Tsushima, and Death Stranding are coming to PS4. They were like very clear that these are still experiences coming to the PS4.
Mm-hmm.
They could still come to the PS5.
Exactly.
Or they'll just be like optimized for PS5, however they want to do it. But they are still coming to PS4. I do want to pull up another side. But Lucy, how did you feel about like seeing that in action?
I thought it was really exciting. I think seeing it in action kind of made me feel like it was going to be more of a jump than I had anticipated, if that makes sense, more of a technological mm-hmm. jump. Because I was thinking, and I know that everyone feels this way at the end of every, you know, console life cycle, like, oh, it's not going to be a massive jump because mm-hmm. the technology is always, you know, already blah, blah, so good. This is coming from the person who thought Crash Bandicoot was the height of graphical glory.
It was at a time.
Who didn't? It was 3D. It was crazy.
My mind was blown. It was significant, and I think we're really going to feel it once we, you know, get that controller in our hand and get into a big open world game.
It's also really exciting because like this is the first time, I believe in Sony's history when the sort of jump between consoles. I feel like they've really planned this one. Not just for backwards compatibility, but for bridging that gap between kind of current library and future library. It's going to be really weird if this next console generation launches and it's not backwards compatible with, at the very least, PS4.
Yeah, which I think is definitely the intention.
Yeah, and I mean, we had this weird thing where, like, PS2 could play, like, most PS1 games, but, like, PS1 was so sort of, I don't know, I don't even know what the hardware was going on there, but I feel like it was you know, one was CD-ROMs, one was DVDs. It was a different, you know, different time. They weren't really thinking that far ahead, but it was sort of like, yeah, why would you focus on making, like, tail-end PS1 games compatible with PS? I mean, yeah. It's backwards compatible, so it didn't matter. And then going from PS2 to PS3, it was like, are you out of your mind? Like, no, yeah. Who cares? It's not even the same definition.
Yeah.
And then 3 to 4 was their big sort of turning point where they're like, crap, we're kind of back to square one here. But in this case, they're not. So it's sort of like, I don't know. It's going to be pretty exciting if they're like, I don't know if this is going to be the case, but like if you buy the newest, latest, and greatest PS4 games that are coming out at the very tail end of the console cycle, and they're like, yeah, they work better on the next-gen stuff.
I think for me what's really interesting, and there's another slide in here that really speaks to this for me, but I see them as seeing it. I think you're right. They're planning ahead for this really well. I think they're expecting at least a slower migration to the PS5 mm-hmm. than has happened in generations past, because they put up a slide in it that says the critical role of the PS4. It will remain the engine of engagement and profitability for the next 3 years and will provide the fertile early adopter gamer base critical will provide the early adopter gamer base critical for next-gen success, and will still have an outstanding roster of exclusive AAA games still to come. They're expecting to hit a 100 million install base this year, still planning to release those exclusives, and believe this will sort of act as a, like, launching off point sort of thing.
I have a question.
Yes.
Because a lot of the chatter around this reveal has been around how much it's going to cost. Yeah. If it costs more than $500... would you guys be buying one day one?
If it was more than 500?
If it was more than 500. And what do you think Sony would push it out more than 500?
I don't think they will, because I don't know. Maybe, obviously, PlayStation has changed a lot since then, but like I still feel like the PS3 launch announcement stuff still looms so large as like what a failure that was mm-hmm. to come out and boisterously say it's $500 and $600 and you'll have to get a second job and all these things. I feel like going above that without giving some caveats for why it's there for now would go over extremely badly. Mm-hmm. For me, like at the end of the day, if I wasn't at this job and if I didn't have to cover these things for work, if I was just a consumer looking at whether or not I want to spend X amount of money on this thing, it would really come down to, especially knowing it's backwards compatible, what are they going to launch it with? Mm. Like if they are going to launch it with PS4 games that are PS5 enabled and that's it, I'm happily going to wait. But if it was PS5 and that's where you can play God of War 2 and Horizon 2 in launch month, then probably I'd do it.
Yeah. Horizon Zero Dawn 2 is, it's such a seductive prospect.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Max?
I don't know. Are we thinking it's going to be that much?
I think 500 is the cap.
Yeah. No, I don't think they would go so far as 600 again.
Yeah.
But, like, it's... I don't know. This is going to be an interesting one because they do have such a massive install base. And they obviously launched PS4 with, like, the... You know, they were like, we got to get people over here. And they waited for Xbox to make the first move. And they came out and they made it the cheapest thing. And it was, they sold it, I'm guessing, at a loss, you know. Yeah. And then they, you know, clearly made up for it. And now they're on top of it. And it's like, how do you hold on to that? And I mean, consoles are so sort of, they're so sort of new still that there's not really a set. Like you get, you know, once every almost a decade, everyone kind of lines up and then everyone learns from each other's mistakes and then maybe forgets them, you know? Like, it's kind of be interesting to see if this is if they manage to keep the same level of humility they had when they were coming out of the PS3 life cycle, or if they forget everything they learned and pull an Xbox One and they come out and they're like, here's this brand new thing. It comes with a PlayStation VR packed in. It is $700. And it's like, whoa, no.
I think if they do that as an option, that's one thing. But yeah, if that's like
how they're
billing it.
A bundle.
It'll be a bundle. Yeah. I'm looking right now on Amazon. The PS4 Pro, just standard 1 terabyte, is going for $400, and the PS4 Slim, not Pro, is $300. My thought is, especially if they're looking at the PS4 as like profitable still for the next 3 years, like this will be a main source of where they're getting their profit, and the idea that the more PS4s you sell, everything's backward compatible, the more likely you are to have those people want to migrate to the PS5 as it becomes more, whether cheap or just enticing, whatever. Those have to have $100 knocked off them in the next year. Like by the time the PS5 launches, those have to be $100 cheaper. And you keep knocking things down. You incentivize people to buy more games. Like you set yourselves up for the PS5.
I mean, especially if that library migrates.
Yeah.
That's going to be real interesting, you know. It's also, I feel so, I'm so happy for anybody who stayed with like a base PS4. Like anybody who got like the launch version and it's still hanging in there, chugging along, or who just bought a Slim when it was kind of, when it was cheap. Like I have a PS4 Pro and it's cool and it's great and I love it, but like it's going to be, I think it's going to be such a huge leap to go from like a launch PS4 to whatever the next thing is.
Yeah, and it's really, and exactly.
Then, and then to bring all your crap along with you and have it suddenly have this like shiny fresh coat of paint and be like, oh, hey. And it's like, I don't
know. You just, you know, you got like a little hobo stick and you're walking into a mansion. Yeah, I love it.
I mean, that's probably a lot of the install base. Like, of course, maybe not people listening here or us in the room who have played with pros or have pros or whatever. But yeah, there's probably, of those 96 million people, probably tens of millions of them have never seen a pro in action outside of a video. And yeah, that jump's going to be huge. I feel like they're really going to have to, though, set the stage for like giving you a reason to want PS5, because PS4 still has a lot of life in it, it feels like.
The interesting thing with me as well is that I had a 4K TV in Australia, and I don't anymore.
Mm.
So if I upgrade, I'm going to have to upgrade my TV as well, because otherwise what's the point?
Yeah.
And then that's going to be a massive chunk of change.
So I was just about to say, like, I keep saying I need to upgrade, and I'm like, I've got a PS4 Pro, I can see HDR and 4K for some games, but if I hold off for next gen, oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be like getting eye surgery. Well, I'm just going to be like, whoa!
I'm seeing the world as it really is for the first time.
Well, and 4K is going to be cheaper in a year.
Exactly. Yeah, like that's the thing, is there's never a good time to buy a TV.
Yep. Yeah.
It's a great time to buy a game console, which is towards like the kind of mid-tail end. Like now is a great time to buy a PS4.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, like, I don't know, that's kind of exciting. Now I'm like, oh, I was gonna wait. Every time like a big beautiful spectacle movie comes out, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna buy a 4K TV for this, yeah. And then I just don't. I miss mine.
Like I really miss mine.
God of War made me buy one.
Yeah,
that was what did it. And having it is amazing. But yeah, I think it will probably be better to buy one next year even. Moving on from that, part of the investor relation info also was just in terms of the longevity and the life of the PS4 so far. God of War has passed 10 million copies sold on PS4.
Ooh, that's awesome.
It's sold over that. Uncharted, so their graph only hits like a $10 million or a 10 million copies sold bar, so I don't have exact numbers on others, but Uncharted looks to be at least another probably like 5 million over that, I think. And then also The Last of Us Remastered has also pushed past 10 million. On PS4 as well. So obviously there's no sign of slowing down when it comes to Sony exclusives. And as like great as that is, when you think about it, it's like God of War and The Last of Us, two of the most premier Sony games of all time. Only a tenth of the PS4 install base has bought those games.
What's wrong with you? Who are you? It's like 30 million people out there who just...
They're just watching, like,
so many. Yeah,
the click Blu-ray.
What you say?
That's
like
what they're using their console
so
for.
So 10 million.
Oh, tenth. Good God. No, I was
tenth.
Yeah.
Like 80 million people.
Who are these? What are they, children?
Probably some of them, I would guess.
You know, there's like so many people out there who probably just get like a PS4 and they're like, yeah, it's for Fortnite.
Yeah.
Maybe Apex. I don't know. They just get like the
GTA 5.
Yeah,
people
seriously.
Still keep buying GTA 5. Yeah. It's always in the top 10.
It's a really good game.
Yeah, it's understandable. But yeah, I mean, those are great sales numbers. It's super exciting to see. But yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about. Oh, yeah, there are so many people who still could buy those games on PS4. Moving on from that, a little bit before the Investor Relation Day, I did mean to bring this up a little earlier. Jack Tretton, the ex-CEO and president of PlayStation America, said he believes Sony is in a, quote, good position for the next console generation, although he believes the company will face, quote, exponentially more competition than during the PS4's lifespan. He was talking to GamesBeat, and he said, I think they're very well... quote, I think they're very well positioned. The leader of the prior generation is always in a good position going into the new generation. And he discussed a little bit of what's been revealed about the PS5 so far and said, from what I've read about the PS5, it sounds impressive. Their business model obviously worked well for them the last time around, and it doesn't look like they're going to deviate from that.
What the hell is old Tretton up to these days anyway?
I don't know what he's doing. I mean, other than talking to GamesBeat, I don't know.
What's that rascal been up to?
Hanging out with... What was Kevin? What was the guy's name that they would bring out on stage who played that character? Why can't I think of his name?
Oh, yeah. The kid from like Role Models?
No, the guy. Kevin Butler.
Oh, Kevin Butler.
Yeah,
no, I was thinking of the Vita kid who was in...
Oh, yeah. He was in Role Models and a couple other things. Yeah,
I bet they're all hanging out.
in PlayStation heaven.
Hell yeah. The actual PlayStation home.
He said Microsoft should give them a better run for their money, and Stadia is a new wrinkle in the market that didn't exist in 2013, and Nintendo is more relevant this time around. I don't disagree with any of that stuff. I do think it's a more competitive time. I do think it's interesting, though, the leader of the last generation is always well positioned. So far, the leader of the last generation tends to always not be the leader of the next generation.
I think well positioned is like you can still fall on your face.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There's still a lot of potential to mess up, depending on how you message. Because a lot of people, it feels like a lot of companies go into it with a little bit of ego.
A lot of pressure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of expectation.
It's very reassuring that like a seasoned businessman had the same exact thoughts on this that I, a simpleton who talks into microphones, had.
He's been on the PlayStation stage.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all I have on Jack Tretton. Yeah. I feel like we hear from him like once a year at E3s now still. He emerges. Yeah. And like
from the cave.
Like a groundhog. Uh-huh. He'll tell you whether or not PlayStation will have a good year.
And then slowly then retreats.
Yeah, just goes away. Other than that, yeah, obviously a lot of PlayStation-centric stuff. A little bit more I want to get to in a second, but first some third-party things I wanted to mention. Dauntless is out this week. It is the first game to launch with PS4 crossplay, making it, I think, only the third game to have crossplay at all with PS4 games, joining Fortnite and Rocket League. So big deal, really great opportunity to actually launch and have that from the go for players across all platforms to be able to play together.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, a thing that broke over the weekend, which is always fun when you get a bunch of slacks when you're trying to just have a sunny Saturday.
Ooh, I love it. Makes me feel alive.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And you're like, 12 notifications. I guess it's time to pay more money in my free mobile games. Nope. I've been hooked on some mobile games recently. Anyway, according to a report from Kotaku, Activision has informed developers at Sledgehammer Games and Raven that both studios will no longer be in charge of the Call of Duty game scheduled for 2020. Instead, Treyarch, who last developed last year's Black Ops 4, will reportedly be taking over and leading development for a new Black Ops. We reached out to Activision, of course. They had nothing to say as of press time, and we haven't heard back since then about it. They, of course, haven't even announced this year's Call of Duty, except for some footballers who played it, let alone what next year's Call of Duty will be. But it's interesting to me that there's that much of a shakeup this far in advance.
Yeah,
that they don't have the time to maybe reshift and see what Raven and Sledgehammer could do to try to fix it. That they essentially now have to support what Treyarch does.
I'm just thinking there must have been some disastrous inner turmoil.
Yeah, that's got to be scary for people at that company hearing these rumblings. Call of Duty has been it's a money printing machine that I feel like in recent years maybe has printed slightly less money, but it's still like a lot of money. And then I don't know, you look at sort of like Activision business wise they're pretty ruthless, and it's like they've got they've got Blizzard over in one corner, and they've got what's it called, Candy Crush. And then you're like, used to be Call of Duty, it's like number one, but it's like, yeah, but that's like console stuff, like get on it, you look over and it's like China's doing PC and mobile, like that's the install base.
And they're launching Call of Duty Mobile to try to compete in that space. Yep. Yeah, Activision is a very different company than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, also like having three studios working on the same game that could effectively go from being annualized, a thing you buy in a box, to just a game as a service.
Yeah. To me, it feels like that's what's going to happen with Blackout. An interesting part of this is that they mention Treyarch and Sledgehammer's work will reportedly be used to essentially make a campaign for whatever Black Ops 5 is, which to me makes it sound like at this point in the production, they weren't planning on doing a campaign again like they did for the last Black Ops, but they'll use this work to help shape that. I do wonder what happens both this year and going on with Blackout, because it has been such a success. To me, it seems weird to say, here's Blackout 2.
Mm.
Like, to me, it feels like they probably should continue the Blackout that already exists. What do you guys think about? How can Call of Duty adapt?
I've been wondering for a while what company we're going to see take their annualized sort of flagship multiplayer experience and flip the switch to make it just a full-blown service. Because, you look at something like Apex or Fortnite, and it's just... There's one app for that. There's one, and like Battlefield's sort of been like that on PC. There's obviously like all the different sort of versions that kind of talk to each other, but like
you're going through Origin.
Exactly. Yeah. But like it's just weird to be like, I don't know. At some point, I feel like we're gonna see it's just going to say Call of Duty. And every year, maybe the color scheme changes and they like patch in new skins and characters, but as opposed to trying to constantly send a rebuild things from the ground up.
I just think that makes so much more sense in today's climate to focus on that. You know, games as service, that's what it's all about now. And you know, you sort of stop the endless need to reinvent yourself with a physical product, and it just becomes an experience that is ongoing.
You also get to eventize the different parts of it. Like if you're like, hey, August is here, that means it's zombies time. Zombies 2021 is out now.
Get here are some Santa skins.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not very imaginative. So.
We've patched in Jeff Goldblum, the magician, once more. Fan favorite returns.
It's crazy how many celebrities they've had do that zombie mode.
Yeah, they have a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Not as much money as perhaps in other years, but still.
Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddy Krueger are here at last. The
Danny
number
Trejo.
One.
Yeah.
The original Odd Couple.
I'd watch that TV show. Yeah, it's interesting to see like stuff coming out about that Call of Duty before we really have gotten anything off the ground for this year's Call of Duty. There was a report a little bit ago that essentially Infinity Ward, who were expecting to be the developers of this year's Call of Duty, hired back a bunch of ex-Infinity Ward developers who have all been instrumental in some way to a lot of Call of Duty entries, which has led to a lot of scuttlebutt that it's probably another Modern Warfare somehow in development, which would make a lot of sense.
They could have just had a bunch of wine and started calling up exes.
That's possible,
just going on LinkedIn.
And it just led to jobs.
Hey, what about the good old days?
Is that what you do when you get drunk? You go on LinkedIn?
Yeah, I go on LinkedIn. That's the number one spot. Former creative directors.
The hot spot for... Okay. I don't even know where to
begin. The hot spot for lonely hearts.
Yeah, there we go.
Hey, Sessler, what are you doing? Remember Rev 3 Games?
Oh, God. A different kind of X-Play that I don't want to know about.
Well played.
Thank you. Moving on from that, I did want to mention there's a big PlayStation thing that I do want us to talk about. But very quickly before that, additional comments from Jim Ryan during the investor relation day that I missed earlier. Just that they're investing in first party with 13 studios around the world right now. Plan to expand through organic growth or acquisitions. So we could probably expect to see another studio at some point join. Or there's been like longstanding rumors, and I know I've mentioned it on the show before, and someone involved in the studio mentioned that he heard us mention it on the show, but there is a PlayStation team that we don't quite know about what they're doing, located in California. There have been rumors they're working on Uncharted, but no one really knows that for sure. And Quentin, sorry I mentioned it again. He's going to love that. Also, please come on the show whenever you're in San Francisco.
Who the hell are you talking about?
Quentin Cobb, who's working. He works at PlayStation right now.
He works at Secret PlayStation?
He works at Secret on a PlayStation team that he can't quite say what he's working on right now.
Would you say it's in Uncharted territory?
It could be. I don't know. He used to work at Naughty Dog, though.
Okay.
So that's what's led a lot of people to believe that, as well as some additional hires and stuff. We'll see if that ever gets announced at some point.
I was trying to come up with a pun just then. I was like, the best I could do was like, would you say it's Drake's fortune? It's not even a play on words.
Would you say it's a thieves' end? I don't know why. But anyway, so I don't think, like, going forward into the PS5 generation, it's likely we'll see some new Sony teams crop up. And I like the idea of that, whether they are continuing older franchises or creating their own new IP. Obviously, PS4 proved to do that, both of those things, pretty well. So I'm excited to see what we can get from that in the next generation.
I think they should have just a big key party and invite all the studios together, and they have to trade IPs. And
that would be amazing.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that happen.
Well, like Media Molecule doing a...
They're like, all right, Media Molecule, you got to make Twisted Metal. And
yeah.
No
Killzone.
Yarn.
That would be
Killzone.
Amazing.
Killzone.
Yeah.
That would be the most heartfelt Killzone.
He's so whimsical.
The Killzone was the friends we made along the way.
All right. It has to be made out of mud and blood and metal. You can't use any craft materials anymore.
Not paper mache Killzones.
Stop making everything out of felt and cotton.
It's beautiful and touches my spirit. While these development studios may not be working on each other's properties, PlayStation is planning to use these properties in other ways, because earlier this week, they also announced PlayStation Productions, an in-house development studio that will work on producing film and television shows based on popular PlayStation IP that already exists. And Sean Layden gave an interview a little bit about it to The Hollywood Reporter. I want to make sure I have all of that information correctly. But essentially, they're looking into developing their own work rather than licensing these things out to other studios, which, of course, has led to some not great video game movies and shows in the past. Before I get to some of the specifics about it, what do you think about the idea that they're just going to start a production company amidst everything else PlayStation's got to focus on?
I'm not sure about this one. Like, it's fun to, you know, come up with ideas of what we want and what we'd like to see, but for my money, I want them to focus on more of their, like, kids' forward properties rather than, like, The Last of Us and God of War. I don't necessarily want to see those stories played out in a dramatic TV or filmic format. Like, I want to see Jack and Daxter.
Yeah.
You know? I want to see, like cartoons.
Yeah. Didn't Layden say something about how he wanted to focus less, or he wanted to focus on, like, the ethos of the games?
Yeah, they said, So Sean Layden's going to be overseeing the studio with Asad Kilzabash, essentially working as the lead of it. And they said they are working out of Sony Studios a lot in Culver City. I'm trying to find the exact quote, but he said essentially, instead of licensing our IP out to studios, we felt the better approach was for us to develop and produce for ourselves, Asad said. One, because we're more familiar, but also because we know what the PlayStation community loves. We looked at what Marvel has done in taking the world of comic books and making it into the biggest thing in the film world, Layden said. It would be a lofty goal to say we're following in their footsteps, but certainly we're taking inspiration from that. I'm trying to find the exact quote you're talking about. You can see just by watching older video game adaptations that the screenwriter or director didn't understand that world or the gaming thing, Layden said. The real challenge is, how do you take 80 hours of gameplay and make it into a movie? The answer is, you don't. What you do is you take that ethos you write from there specifically for the film audience. You don't try to retell the game in a movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess it's a very fine line, because to me, The Last of Us story was perfect. I don't want to see, I mean, I know we're getting a sequel, but, like, I don't want to see a movie adaptation that's loosely, you know, in that universe with those characters, but isn't that story, because that story is
perfect. Like, do Fear the Last of Us or whatever. Tell another story that same universe.
Yeah, do have different characters.
I can't remember, but there was, like, an ongoing story where you'd essentially pick up some of the, like, notes were about a continuing story of a certain guy. I'm totally forgetting the name of it, but essentially you saw this play out via these notes, and it's like, you could make a 6-episode miniseries that focuses on that in The Last of Us world.
Yeah, I think this is really exciting. I think that we're sort of, obviously superhero movies are still going forward, but there's been, you know, 10 years of Marvel, and you're going to get a certain audience fatigue eventually, and Hollywood goes through trends, and I feel like video game adaptations are like the next thing. I think Detective Pikachu was sort of the first one to really stick the landing on that front. No disrespect to Mortal Kombat, a fine film that shouts its own title before the opening credits are even shown. But yeah, like, I think that, I mean, obviously Sonic the Hedgehog is sort of, you got the kind of a Goofus and Gallant situation here, where, like, Pikachu laid the groundwork for a Pokemon cinematic universe, and Sonic the Hedgehog seems like, you know, corporate movie people sort of trying to cherry pick what's going to make the most money at the box office and alienating the fan base at the same time.
Well, and the Pokemon company's been very, like, clear that they have not wanted an adaptation for a long time. Like, they've turned away those things so often.
I will also just say that for every Detective Pikachu, there's an Assassin's Creed, you know, which was another movie that was in the vein of, in the universe, like, but it was a new story, and it was so boring.
No, I skipped it. I was looking forward to it because of, like, the director and the talent involved and everything, and then it just, it fell apart.
So lifeless.
But, I mean, the thing is, you were saying for every Detective Pikachu, there is one of those. There haven't really been a lot of Detective Pikachus. Like, we really haven't gotten too many of those.
No, people will go to bat to defend, like, you know, Silent Hill.
Resident Evil.
The most recent Tomb Raider. Yeah, the first Resident Evil is not bad. But, yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know. I think we're at a point where that we are going to start seeing, and also it's a generational thing. Like, we've all grown up with games. Like, people in their 20s through 40s who are, you know, target audience for, or, you know, they're an audience, they're not necessarily target audience, but, like, games are sort of an established commonplace thing. You look at it, like, Transformers was around for 20 years before it became a movie franchise.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it was, like, the biggest thing in the world. And then that kind of, you know, everyone else jumped on the toy bandwagon. And then it's like, all right, so what did you grow up with? And it's like reaching a point where, like, a generation of kids grew up with, you know, Jack and Daxter or Crash Bandicoot or whatever. And it's like, oh, maybe maybe you turn those into a movie.
We can do something with this, yeah. What's interesting is, as part of this announcement, Layden mentioned, we don't have to rush to market. We don't have a list of X number of titles must be done in this year. So it seems like the company is being able to play pretty fast and loose with what their interests will be, at least in these initial stages. They don't have to put out three Uncharted movies in the next year. They did, during the Investor Relation Day, though, mention the Uncharted movie, which was being made by Sony Pictures, so still within the family, is still in advanced development. So mm-hmm. that movie is still happening. And then they also confirmed a Twisted Metal TV series is okay. one of the first things being produced
by
PlayStation Productions.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there were, like, no exact details about what it is, but the chairman and CEO of Sony Pictures Entertainment was talking about PlayStation Productions in the Q&A of the investor relation call and was basically like, yeah, we just closed this deal for an older IP. It's called Twisted Metal. We're going to be making a show out of that. That's it.
And the Juggalos rejoiced.
I mean, like, to me, that shows that probably they're going to be taking some liberties. Like, they really are going to be trying to dig up some older stuff, some weirder stuff. So I did want to ask you both what you would like to see adapted either as a film or a TV show. And to give you some time to think, I did pose this question to the Beyond Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond, if you would like to join. But I basically asked, what would everyone like to see? One of the last comment as of I'm reading, I actually like quite a bit, an educational kid show starring the Astrobots.
Oh, that's cute.
I just think is, that's really cute.
Which is a pleasant idea, like yeah. you were saying, Lucy. I think, like, playing to kids, they have so much from the PS2 era that would play really well. Mm. Going through some of the others, a lot of people suggested a Bloodborne series.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I would like a Bloodborne anime series.
Yeah, some people are saying, like, focus on it as an anime.
The Bloodborne comic that I think Titan Comics is putting out these days is wonderful.
Mm.
It is so gross and weird and just it looks like horny European like Bandit Designee, like French comics where like people are like a little bit cartoony and everything is a little bit too hairy looking. Like it's kind of goofy in this strange, like, what am I looking at kind of way.
Yeah.
I remember, I think like Chloe Rad, who used to work here, pulled it up and was just like, yeah, I don't like this at all. And I was like, no, this is what it should be.
I think that game is so much about environmental storytelling. Like it's so much about atmosphere. You could really tell any story within that universe. And I think that's very rich for a TV series. Yeah, I would love
give
that.
Give me that. God, I'm trying to think what else. Like, I don't know.
Michael from the group said, is Infamous too easy? They created their own superhero. He could easily translate to another medium, for that matter, an authentic samurai movie based off Sucker Punch's newest project also. This is why we sent Goldfarb there, to do these things for us.
Mm.
But yeah, Infamous obviously is, like, as of right now, kind of a dead franchise. Like, it's in...
He was just not, like, a particularly inspiring
Cole
antagonist.
Himself, yeah.
But also, that's a universe that has superheroes in it.
Yeah.
You know, they, just right there, you've got groundwork, you've got an existing IP. Mm. I mean, it's kind of like the same deal with the HBO Watchmen series, which
yeah.
is, I think, technically a future of the comic, but for the most part, it's 30 years disconnected.
Just doing its all thing, yeah.
Yeah.
A few others. Nathan mentioned Ratchet and Clank. Oh, wait, that happened and should be ignored. Maybe they can do it right this time. Yeah, that movie, I was looking it up. Out of its, it had a budget of $20 million and grossed $12 million.
You know, I completely forgot that happened.
It bummed
me
up.
Like, my memory just went boop. Like, Men in Black, gone.
The revival game is so good, and it was paired with this attempt to bridge the gap, and it just didn't work. A few other things. Matthew suggested a Horizon movie with Rose Leslie, aka Ingrid from Game of Thrones. Ygritte. Yeah, I was like, Ingrid, what's that name?
Oh, Ingrid.
Josh the classic from character. The group also corrected him on that.
I'd like to see a Little Big Planet series for kids.
Yeah.
That'd be cute.
That would be really cute. Matthew said Knack kids cartoon, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are obviously going for some third-party stuff, so Jonathan with an A said a Final Fantasy anthology series where each season is kind of an adaptation of a game in the series.
That would be interesting. What if they did like a, you know, more family-friendly like Love, Death, and Robots where they kicked PlayStation Dreams to a whole bunch of animation studios and they were like, all right, make a cartoon in this, and they were just like, go nuts.
Ben from the group says, Dreams, every show can be completely different but have a through line along the lines of something like The Odyssey. The 90s kids TV show, not the poem.
Or a sketch comedy built within Dreams.
Yes. Yeah.
That would be cool.
Well, I mean, there's all that opportunity. They, when we had the Dreams folks in here, they were talking about the fact that like the game has like a a built already puppet character, but people have been putting on these shows with the puppet and doing all these things of just making these hilarious like comedy bits.
It's just like Hardball, but it's in dreams. It's just like a hard hitting political show.
I'm just reading this one off the cuff. Ryan said Nathan Drake as Sly Cooper in an amazing animated style movie.
What?
I think a Sly Cooper. So there's a Sly Cooper animated show in the works that I believe is set for an October 2019 release. It's still in the works. They're planning on it, but we don't know anything about that. Maybe this could shift over there. I love Sly Cooper and would love to see that world continue. A few people did suggest, though, God of War. How do you both feel about anything set in the God of War universe?
I just, I can't, again, that story is so perfect, and you've got to sort of take yourself out of it and go, okay, what other stories could be told in that universe? And then I just think about, Hercules and Xena, Warrior Princess, and, can't get my head out of that kind of, budget.
Castlevania. The animated series. Yeah. I feel like that pairs very well, where you're this is a weird, short, bloody story. Just tell it that way. That could be interesting.
I feel like, taking the Castlevania method and probably applying that to Bloodborne or something would work pretty well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Christian said, I'm seeing an opportunity for a bit of smart marketing in the return of the tie-in movie. Let's get that Death Stranding film that details the collapse of society and the rise of that stuff 2 weeks before the game drops. You and Norman Reedus' shoes, or a Last of Us film that fills the gap between the two games. Something like Kingsglaive had the right idea. It's just a pity that film wasn't great. I feel like I've never seen a great tie-in thing.
I don't think I've ever seen a great tie-in thing unless it was a toy from McDonald's.
That's true.
I was going to say there's a lot of great toys out there, Lucy. You got to come by my desk more often. It's all over the place. I thought the animated series they put out for Final Fantasy 15 was pretty good. Kingsglaive was over budget and kind of up its own ass, but the animated series was really cute because it was how does Ignis know all these people? Is it Ignis, the main boy? I can't remember that game.
I get Final Fantasy protagonists mixed up.
Yeah, their names. Whatever. The main one and had to be friends with the Gladio and Favela and Puerto or whatever their names were.
And Sora.
Yeah, Sora was in there, I think.
Probably. Alex said for a movie, The Order 1886, made by Guillermo del Toro.
I mean, that's amazing, but they'd never do it.
Del Toro also already has 13 movies that will hopefully maybe one day come out. I would kill to see if they could continue that universe and make a solid thing out of it.
I think we're going to see more Order.
You think so?
It's Noctis.
Noctis.
Oh, yeah.
Is Ignis is the one with the glasses, yeah? See, I love that game. That was my favorite game
Ignis
of the year.
Yeah, Ignis is in there.
Ignis is the one who's the cook, right?
I think so.
He looks like a nerd.
Like a sexy nerd.
Well, they all look like sexy nerds, but he looks like he's got glasses. He looks like he's a business nerd.
He's the sexy glasses nerd.
Yeah, no, he was great. He's always cooking pancakes and stuff made out of animals you killed. It's a good game.
Great hair.
Andrew said, not our Andrew, but another Andrew said, Parappa the Rapper animated series?
Maybe. Yeah. I want to see an adult, a serious adult drama based in the world of Mr. Mosquito. It's just told from his perspective as he flies around and drinks the blood of people having affairs and stuff.
What about, Brennan also suggested, in addition to that Astrobot thing at the beginning, a Wipeout movie done with the drama of a movie like Rush. So basically just Rush, but with sci-fi cars.
What?
I love it.
If you want a Wipeout movie structure, go watch the anime Redline. It is awesome. It's
never heard
about
of it.
Super fast space cars.
Okay.
It's like if you made an M-rated speed racer that's just doing all sorts of hard trucker drugs.
Nice.
I thought you were just going to say the Wachowski's Speed Racer.
No, it's like that, but just fist pumpingly fast paced in a not squeaky clean cutesy way. It's very much there's people taking clothes off and stuff doing drugs.
And then of course the very important suggestion that Willie made of just Knack.
Knack.
Knack 4 coming to the
Knack PS5. Sure is a thing. That exists in the world.
The unkillable Knack.
That really brought the energy
up. The resilient Knack.
I'd watch that show if it was the Amazing Spider-Man or the Spectacular Spider-Man, but they kept giving him adjectives.
You know who would watch that show is children, because sometimes they just watch things and they,
they sure would put their eyes towards the screen.
They did, yeah.
What a ringing endorsement. If you want to let us know if you at home have any ideas about what would make a better PlayStation show or movie than any of the things we or our other listeners suggested, feel free to write in to beyond@ign.com with your suggestions, and maybe we'll read some on the show next week. As we're wrapping some things up, wanted to first check in with a brief memory card.
Memory card needs to calm the hell down over there.
Memory card's excited. There are a lot of really good stories happening.
Too rowdy for such a quiet, nostalgic, personal moment.
Well, this week it's actually PS1 launch shenanigans.
Ooh.
That we're going to have. Of course, Memory Card is our weekly segment where we read a story sent in by you, the listeners and watchers at home, related to something funny, sad, hilarious, crazy that happened to you in your PlayStation life. So if you want to write in with the subject line Memory Card to beyond@ign.com, and we'll read them on the show. This week's comes from Brandon. Brandon wrote in and also made sure to correct a typo, so I want to make sure I get that typo correct. Yes, we do. All right, good. Brandon says, hello all. I hope you're all having a fun recording because I'm about to bring it down into the shady underworld of thievery and loss.
Hell yeah.
Oh, I'm here for this.
Also, Brandon said, long story. It's not that long. We have gotten longer that I have not read on the show. I should say thank you, everyone who's been sending in your stories. Please keep it relatively brief because we do have to read these out loud. Anyway, Brandon said, I'm 7 years old on Christmas of 95. With my innocence intact, I'm ready for a new generation of gaming on Christmas Day. My older brother spent months selling me on the PS1 so it could be our joint Christmas present that year. 32 bits, CDs, big boy games. We tear the wrapping off and behold at the glorious Sony PlayStation. We open the box and the first thing we pull out was a giant book of computer coding or something.
Oh my God, his parents were trolling.
I remember thinking, this is so advanced, we need a huge instruction manual just to work it. But upon further investigation, we discovered the harsh truth. Someone had opened the box and replaced the system with this book. The old switcheroo they Indiana Jones'd us. It wasn't the parents, it just happened.
Oh my God.
With my innocence murdered, the tears started flowing. My father was furious, of course, as he had to wait in line for hours just to secure the system. He took it back to Best Buy the day after Christmas and fought tooth and nail and didn't leave the store until he got us our PlayStation. I'll never forget what my dad did for us that day and now. As a father myself, I have a way greater appreciation for the stress he had to endure just to make his kids happy. Thanks for all that you do, and shout out to all the parents out there who support their kids' interest. P.S. Not so happy ending, as one of the games we got was Street Fighter, the movie, the game. Nonetheless, they eventually got their PlayStation.
See, we're talking about video game movies. That's what the first good video game movie is going to be. Street Fighter, the movie, the game, the movie. Yeah.
I'd believe it.
Yeah.
So there's a Disney Plus is going to have High School Musical, the series.
Good Lord.
Or High School Musical, the musical. So.
No.
Anything can happen.
Brandon, go back to high school. That's a wonderful story.
That is such a great story.
Thank you so much, Brandon, for writing in with that story. And thank you, everyone who's been writing in with so many amazing memory card stories. We're going to be reading a lot more in the weeks to come. But please keep sending them in. Remember, it's beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card so I can be sure to find it through all the other emails.
And if you got any great deals on memory cards, use that same subject line. Let Dornbush know.
Use offer code BEYOND for 15% off your favorite memory cards at your memory card store. Just try it. Anyway, moving on, we're going to talk about what we're playing this week. I don't have a snazzy jingle yet for that, but I have asked Ronnie for some more jingles.
What we're Love playing this week?
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Games. Anyway, Max, what are you playing this week?
I'm playing Rage 2.
Is it making you angry?
Are you playing it?
That's what I'm playing at the moment as well.
Are you having a fun time with this game?
I am, actually. Like, I'm pretty early in, but I am having a fun time. Love the combat. Love the way it feels.
Yeah, like early on, I got very cross at this game for being another wasteland I have to mope around in and for having too many little tutorial menus popping up. And then the second I got into the loop where you were shooting stuff directly in the face, I'm going to try not to say the F word because I knew you have to deal with it, but... Oh God, it's good.
Yeah.
Like end of the day, like I mean, I know this is an Avalanche game, but Id was heavily involved with it, and Id knows how to make guns in games that are fun as hell.
Yeah.
And it's just so much fun to just run around and just blow the crap out of everything in there.
And it kind of like I'm playing on normal. It kind of plays itself a little bit. Like it's not particularly challenging. It's just really smooth and buttery, and yeah, I'm having a good time. Like I know that a lot of the criticisms leveled at it is that it does get really repetitive, and you know it's. Story isn't anything special, but like just to muck around in its world, blowing things up in the face is really fun.
No, Tom Marks put up a little write-up about how sort of the wonder of you know, occasionally like sort of mediocre or not, you know, not mind-blowing game of the year games are still really fun just because they have a bunch of stuff to do. And like maybe having fetch quests and kind of filler nonsense is okay. And, you know, looking at it from the perspective of like a kid who only gets one game a year, or you're trying to get the most mileage out of something you spent your hard-earned money on. Which is, of course, people are mad at him for, you know, taking the side of the publisher and making excuses for filler content. But yeah, I mean, Rage 2 definitely has its share of issues. Like it feels like so sort of like they really wanted to get their most out of that same universe that they started building up, and it's just like people played that game, but I don't know anyone who fell in love with it. It seemed like a Fallout without the style guide.
Yeah,
it's just kind of. It's sort of cyberpunk. It's sort of doomy. It's kind of retro, but not really.
Very video gamey.
Yeah. Honestly, there's parts where like it opens up with this like cyborg warlord giving this like opening speech, and it hits those notes where you're like, if I saw somebody playing this in a movie, I'd be like, man, Hollywood misrepresents games.
Yeah.
I am the mutant commander, I choose you to rescue the ARC satellite converter.
I tweeted out that it felt like its voice acting felt like it came straight out of an 80s cartoon. I don't know if you're playing as a male or a female protagonist, but like the female protagonist is very like, hey, yeah, what's going on? Yeah. I'm badass. Like,
I mean, I wish that it was as goofy and off the wall as all the marketing when it was announced made it seem like. It seems very much like they were like, oh, we need to make this sort of more self-aware, but that all was like kind of a thin layer on top of it. Like, it's all very colorful and pink and bright and nonsensical at a glance, but then when you get like actually into it, it's clear that some parts of this world building is really kind of takes itself seriously.
Yeah.
And it just makes me so, it makes me just, we did not deserve Far Cry Blood Dragon. A game where the main character yells at the number of tutorial menus he has to look at. And like, just like, give me the gun already. Let me shoot the gun. But it's like, it's, again, I'm having a fun time with it.
Yeah, no, you're so right, though. Tonally, it is kind of all over the place. Like, there's that great bit where it's like, stick your hand into the mysterious hole. And yeah. Like, that's an instruction you get in the game. And that's kind of funny. And then, yeah, you're right.
If that was spread across multiple things.
Yeah, that tone kind of, yeah, it's inconsistent.
Yeah, or if like you have to do like tutorials whenever you get like a new gun. And the fact that it was like, here's how you use the shotgun. I was like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Let me shoot this stuff already. Like, it puts you in this weird, like, you know, kind of VR mission type thing where you're just like, try, learn how to use it. And I was like, well, okay, well, you do have alternate fire. Fair enough.
But if only every game kind of had like a, do you know how to play this type of game?
Yeah.
Yes, skip this part, like, unless it's really intrinsic to the story. Yeah. Like, I remember that was a big thing for a few Zeldas before Breath of the Wild where I was like, yeah, I know how to play a Zelda game. Obviously, there are new people who don't, but I can skip the 5 hours in the village.
No, it's more that it doesn't, I don't know, it hits a lot of sort of cliches and tropey stuff without acknowledging that, you know? And I'm just like, if you were blasting Andrew W.K. and the protagonist was like aggressively swearing at the fact that they had to like, you know, shuffle through menus and learn how to use a shotgun for the first time, like it would be disarmingly self-aware, but it's not. And I can't really fault it for that because at the end of the day, it's a, you know, finely functional video game.
And also, you know, it's such a, again, comedy in games is hard. It's a fine line to tread. Like, sometimes self-awareness can be really obnoxious. Sometimes it can be hilarious.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if it was constantly doing sort of the Borderlands, like, tongue-in-cheekery, I'd be sort of fed up with it. But, no, it's a really good time. It's got some just goddamn awesome explosions.
Mm.
Like, I love that one of the stupid repetitive fetch quest things you have to do is... there's like bandits that just have like they're guarding stolen fuel. You have to blow up their fuel depots, and it's just like, oh, so this is just a shoot the red barrels outpost.
But and really, it is like you're just going, okay, there's a red barrel, there's a red barrel. Oh, there are three guys just having a little like sing song beside around the red
it's
barrel.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah.
There's like I don't know, if I wanted, it's like, oh, they hid one of the red barrels inside a garage. I have to figure out how to open the garage. You open the garage, there's like three dudes hanging out by this giant red gas tank, and you're just like throw a grenade in there, and it's just. Yeah, it's a stupid, fun, good time, and I'm happy to have something that's actually like kind of hooking me. It has so many weird little annoying quirks, though.
Gameplay wise, or like
I wouldn't even call it like I would say interface wise. Like it has all these like sort of kind of like cyber like artifacting effects when you're going when you're shuffling through the menu. Like it's got to look like it's a coded transmission from space or whatever, but it like lags in the menu. Like have you noticed this when you're shuffling between like the map and the like your nanotrites and your
I haven't, but
now I will. It's a thing that it's bothered me about other games too, where it's
right.
Like when it's like the menu is a thing you're going to spend time shuffling back and forth with, and when you've got to pull up the map and there's a lag for the map, it's just one of those like, please don't. And it's like, on top of that, like the people have complained a lot about the sort of lack of fast travel points, but there's a thing that really bothered me, which is when you move the map around, it makes this like ticking noise, and it's really like everyone in my house hates it, and I'm starting to not like it too. Like I was playing it, my wife was hanging out with me, and I was like, "Oh, you can play your Switch, and we can spend time together." And she's like, "Yeah, all right, whatever." And I like pull it up, and I'm like, and she's like, "What is that noise?" And I'm like, "It's the map." And she's like, "I hate the noise." And it's like, and I'm like, "I'm sorry, I have to set the waypoints." And I'm like trying to find out where to get the BFG, and I'm like, "It's in Vinelands. It's down there somewhere." And I'm
it's just like normal noise for a second, and then you have to go
she
back.
Just it's like it's so aggressively like just it doesn't need to be a noise. It doesn't, you can just move the cursor and it doesn't need to make a sound. And my wife just like angrily like packs up and goes in the other room.
I can
and
just I'm imagine like, her shoulders like.
And now I'm like turning the volume down whenever I go in the map, and it's like. And then like the dog hates it, and he's just sort of like, and like you know like just walks out of the room, and I'm like by myself, and I'm like just looking at this stupid map.
Yeah. Does your dog react to other stuff in games like vehemently in any way?
Not really, but they used to have a Amazon Prime exclusive show that was called like Cat Toy Cartoon that was just like a flash cartoon of a cricket, and it would be like click 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 click, and it was on like a weird colored background, and he used to go up to the TV and like put one hand on the entertainment console and watch it like it was like the finale of a soap opera, which was very cool. So we'd have friends over, we're like, "Oh, it's time for the dog's favorite show," and we put that on. People would get excited, and he got over it. I think he got too old.
He got bored.
Does your dog react to other dogs on screen? Because my cat used to like be like, "Oh my god, it's another cat."
He has had some adverse reactions to certain critters in Bloodborne. Like I've definitely had, and that could also be me just shrieking at the top of my lungs when a thing bursts through like a pile of wet boards and it's just like ah.
Dog, he doesn't really react to a lot of other like creatures on screen, but he has this phobia we figured out in real life. He hates people standing still. Like if a human in the distance is standing still, he will start barking.
That
like
is such a neurotic thing.
It's super, and so. On Netflix, if you leave it hanging for a little bit, like its pause menu will come up and it's just flashing all its like images of its shows, and it'll just be like the face of the New Girl cast or the face of Chris Rock from an Adam Sandler movie, and he flips out if we let it go to that.
Like his dog is like the Larry David of dogs.
Yeah. Oh, he absolutely is. But that's really funny. Can't stand people standing still.
I flip out when Netflix autoplays previews for its latest show about Europeans cooking or a killer of women or whatever the stupid shows they're doing these days.
They've got a lot of shows.
I just panic and I X out and I go play Rage so I can listen to that soothing menu sound.
And so everyone else will leave you.
But no, just to cap that off, like Rage 2 is like, it's cool to see something that's sort of, it's so very Far Cry, but it's Far Cry made by different people. And it's kind of interesting to see like their take on it. And it's a good time. It's fun.
Yeah.
I totally don't. I don't think it's a, you know, I think it's like maybe an 8 out of 10 kind of game. But like, you know, it's a good time.
It's fun to have. Yeah. I've been playing an embargoed thing I can't talk about till next week. Smaller thing, but we'll talk about it next week. And then also been playing a little bit of Everybody's Golf VR, which is finally out this week. I know, Lucy, I made you jump in the VR to play a couple holes.
I enjoyed it. It's like it's fun. Although I still get VR terror. You know, okay. I've explained my VR terror. Like, I still, like, I'm like, where am I? And it's very, you know, you really do feel like you're there in that game.
Yeah. And that one, you're pretty much static, though, at least. Like, you don't have to worry about moving too much. But, yeah, you have full movement that you can look around for the course and everything. And it's a very, like, quick pick-up-and-play sort of thing. Like, it starts you out. You're limited. You have one course you can choose from. You can only pick a random three-hole rounds, you slowly unlock the ability to play 9 holes and 18 holes and different courses and different clubs and everything. It's playing it a little bit. Now, I know Max, you played it at the preview event. I'm enjoying it the more I play it. Like, the more I get into it, I'm like, it's, you can't think of it as a golf simulator. Like, it is more fun and more rewarding if you're just, like, quick hits and, like...
I'm so relieved to hear that this was your takeaway, too, because I previewed it a while back, and I was just like, this is not... I was sort of expecting it to be, like, a one-to-one swing the golf club, and it's, you know, reacts to that, but it's much slower than that, so it's kind of like... Maybe pretend you're swinging a golf club.
Yeah, go up about like a fourth of a swing, and then it's more just about the power that you hit it with. Because for me, the thing is, like, someone who's played golf before, I find if I try to wind the move controller behind my back and then come down with it, because it's so light, my hands will move. And so suddenly I accidentally just like slice the ball out of bounds, or like things will go awry, whereas where you're just moving a little bit, you're much better about it. Lucy figured out if you just don't think about it, you're better at the game.
Yeah.
We tried to be like, Jonathan's played golf. I have seen people play golf, and I was like, I shall try to imitate that the best I can. And then it's just like, doesn't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's fun to just jump into VR golf for a little bit. It's a very like easy, just play a few rounds, skip the... lot of voiceover from your caddy and
lots of pauses.
Yeah.
She's like, what do you want to do next? And she's bizarrely posh.
I mean, my assumption is like they animated it for the Japanese dialogue and then just had to fill the gaps for other languages.
Yeah.
So unfortunately it can have some pauses. But other than that, and you can skip the bulk of that, thankfully. But other than that, I'm having a good time with it, and I'll probably be playing some more.
I want to give a shout-out to you, Jonathan,
yes,
for taking that title really, really literally and setting up a kiosk at your desk and saying that everybody in the office can come play golf.
It's everybody's golf. Yeah. They should get the chance to. Yeah. I'll keep the VR set there for everyone who wants to play.
National Socialist Golf.
That was the original working title.
Yeah.
Before they changed it. And just briefly before we move on, Max, you played a little bit of Dreams for a video series.
Oh, yeah. We did a couple of little Let's Plays, Brian Altano and I. They're up on IGN's YouTube and IGN.com if you can find them on there. It's difficult sometimes. But we did. We found the worst things we could find on there. And I mean, no disrespect to the people creating them. I mean, we were typing like bathroom words in there. We were trying to find... like, we found one that I really like, which is...
bathroom words?
Yeah, you know, like fart, piss, things
I've
like that.
I've never heard that term
really?
Before. No. Fart? No, yeah. I mean, yeah.
No, I know.
What is fart?
Yeah.
bathroom?
I don't know. It's like fart? Yeah, you know, we type naughty words into the search function, and most of the things on there, because, first of all, it's still very early access type stuff, but also, you know, it's a squeaky clean, family-friendly place, mostly. So we did find... like Bathroom Simulator 2019, which is really weird. We also try to find knockoffs of existing IPs, so like Bootleg Mario. Somebody made a pretty impressive Mario 64. It's impressive, but still also weird because it's running in that like Dreams puppet engine.
Yeah. Right.
And then we found one that was clearly done as a goof, which is it's Sonic the Hedgehog in a supermarket, but he's like after cheese. And which I don't think Sonic, like, it's in chili dogs, but he doesn't really, that's not his thing. That's like a mouse food. And it's this awful model of Sonic the Hedgehog running around in this like dilapidated supermarket where there's like knocked over shelves and there's these like hovering, you know, chunks of cheddar. And every time he picks it up, he goes, oh, cheese. And it sounds like a different Jaleel White character. Like, it's really horrible. And it keeps getting like more. Like, the music gets more frantic. And there's, like, it's really bad. So please go watch that.
Oh, my God.
We were
the funniest thing I've ever heard.
I cannot wait for that game to come out and for the internet to just get a hold of it.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some amazing stuff being made in there. I don't know if we talked about it like a week or two ago, but on like a less crazy side, someone basically made, or crazy, but in a different way, someone made a trumpet with their controller. So they basically tied microphone, like, in a headphone jack around the controller and made the buttons on the, like, the triggers, the buttons of a trumpet, and they were able to play the proper notes of a trumpet that way.
How do you blow in it?
The microphone that you tie, they tied the microphone basically around one of the legs of the controller, and they blow into
it.
In Dreams.
That's outrageous.
Yeah. I cannot wait for this thing to go just get out there.
I know. Yeah, I'm very excited. Yeah. The more and more things that come from it, we'll definitely be covering those as they happen. Very quickly, I just got this in as breaking news. I know we're running a little long, but just MPD numbers for April came in. Mortal Kombat was the best-selling game of the month. It where is it? Was the best-selling game of April and instantly became the second best-selling game of 2019 year-to-date. Best-selling on all platforms on which it was released. So PC, PS4, Switch, Xbox One.
Hell yeah.
Days Gone was the second best-selling game of April with a debut month that ranks as the seventh highest in history for a Sony-published title. And after just one month on the market, Days Gone is Sony Ben's best-selling game in terms of lifetime revenues.
Good on them. Contrary to public opinion, I am actually really happy that Days Gone is selling well.
How dare you be happy about a thing?
I know. Lucy,
how dare you?
I know.
You know what? I think I can point out one thing that Days Gone could have done better. They could have had Scorpion in their game.
True, then they would have been number one.
He kicks ass.
And then also, interestingly, MLB The Show 19 ranks as the third best-selling game of April and is now the 10th best-selling game of 2019. It is also the best-selling sports title of 2019 year-to-date. I don't know how many sports titles have been released this year. The Switch was the best-selling console of the month, so not PS4. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that before. It'll be another week before we can talk about that, obviously. Cool. That pretty much mirrors the PSN sales for this month. And so far, year-to-date, Kingdom Hearts 3 still the number one game of the year.
That game could have Scorpion in it too, you know.
It might in the DLC. We'll find out. As we're wrapping up, Max, where can people find you online?
You can find me, Max Scoville, on Twitter or Instagram. But instead of doing that, I would highly recommend you go check out Up at Noon, the show that Brian and I have been making. We are five episodes in. It is weekly. We are now putting the full episodes on YouTube. Please go watch the full episodes. They're really weird. They're very funny. We're extremely happy with them. They are a different format from the previous show, which some people are cross about because they miss an hour long of nonsense unscripted content. But I realize that time is precious and life is short, and some people just want a short show they can watch while they're taking the bathroom break at work. So maybe go and watch our Bad Up at Noon show while you're doing bathroom word stuff in the bathroom. Thank you.
Lucy, what about you?
You can find me... Sorry, I'm still laughing about that Sonic thing. you can find me at on Twitter and Instagram at Luce O'Brien. Both of those things.
And I am at JM Dornbush on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me there as well as, of course, on Beyond every week. Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific on beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, as well as all your favorite podcast services around the world. Please make sure if you are listening to us via podcast or on YouTube, please rate, subscribe, leave a comment, leave a thumbs up, not a thumbs down. I don't know the rating systems for every individual platform, but please use the positive ratings where you can. And of course, we are so close to 600. Thank you so much, everyone. And as always, Beyond.
Yeah, let us know which game you think needs Scorpion in it in the comments. Thank you.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.